In our gospel today, we find Jesus still making his pivotal and final journey to the holy city of Jerusalem as a pilgrim. And he is becoming more and more aware as he goes that as he travels there, he's going to be going for the last time to offer up his life. And so he's doing the heroic thing to sacrifice all that he has. In the context of this journey, all these fascinating things happen to him, and today is one of those stories on the journey. If you were a contemporary in the scene at the time, or if you were somebody hearing about this story decades later through the mouths of the apostles and their followers before Luke wrote it all down, some things would have struck you as a contemporary Palestinian or Jew about this entire scene on the way to Jerusalem. One would, of course, be the fact that 10 people were miraculously healed. That's a rather extraordinary occurrence, shows that Jesus is the one who speaks for God's power, who ushers in the reign of wholeness and life for all that opposes it. So the healings would have certainly turned your head. Also very fascinating, it would not have escaped notice, especially to the faithful Jews in this people traveling, would be the fact that Jesus chose to interact with a group of lepers. In the Mosaic covenant and the Mosaic laws that any faithful Jew, and Jesus was a faithful Jew, were bound to observe, you did not want to do anything that would ever make you ritually impure or unclean. You guarded ritual purity with all that you could. It's how you maintained a righteous state. And it was ritually forbidden to interact with lepers in any way. Long story why. So not only does Jesus bring the healing, but he does something that they would have been really loath to do at that time. He crosses that boundary and he speaks with them. So unthinkable. So he breaks barriers to reach out to those in need of service, and he heals. But most remarkable in the entire situation, even more than the healings, impressive as that is, and the bit about the impurity, more remarkable would have been the last part, the presence of a Samaritan. That would have turned everyone's heads. Why? It's a long story about the Samaritans, but to give you something of a brief analogy about how it was between the faithful Jews of the time and the Samaritans, their neighbors to the north, it's a little bit like if you go to the south in America today to, say, Mississippi, Alabama, and you have evangelical Baptists and you have Catholics. That's kind of how it was with the Samaritans and with the Jews. In our contemporary case, both Christians, but each group would say the other has everything else all wrong. Pray in the wrong way, worship the wrong spot, la-da-da-da-da. For the Jews, the Samaritans, something of a similar thing. Both Jewish, but fiercely at odds about how to live out their faith. And at this point in history, they were not on good terms at all. So how is it, therefore, that the one who shouldn't have gotten this in any way, shape, or form, the one from Samaria, is the only one who does two critical things? One, falls down and worships before Jesus, which is a recognition of his divinity. So the foreigner gets God's presence in a dramatic way, and he thanks him. He offers thanks. The Jews prided themselves on being right worshipers and right givers, and all 9 of them had left the scene. But the one who they thought couldn't have possibly grasped this, the Samaritan, he gets it. He knows who Jesus is, and he knows that he's given him a tremendous, tremendous gift. And because he knows that, he comes back and he offers his thanks. There are a lot of takeaways from this very famous story that Luke preserves. But for this morning, a couple simple ones for our purposes today. For one, it is really true that when we realize, like the Samaritan, that something tremendous has been given to us, that we are blessed people, blessed to know, blessed to love, blessed to serve, blessed to have anything at all, when that begins to sink into our hearts, it changes our worldview, and it leads us to give thanks. It leads us to be generous. I hear this story, and I think to myself, am I mindful of my blessings? Am I outdone by other people's generosity and their gratitude? I don't want to be like those other 9 who just take all this for granted. I want to be like that one who was obviously so convicted of the truth of God's presence that he chose to come back, give honor, and give thanks. I want to be that one. He's it. Also, sometimes I think there is a tendency in our hearts, it's true for me anyhow, to think that maybe we are the unusual one in the group, and therefore we couldn't possibly be called, couldn't possibly be chosen, couldn't possibly have gifts to give back. that maybe that's everybody else's job. That, you know, I'm too much the odd, unusual one, the unusual character. That must be me. Therefore, I will sit back and let everybody else speak up, do the work, whatever. When that happens, that mistaken attitude, because it isn't true, we're all called, every single one of us, when that happens, we become like the other nine. We don't want to be that. We want to be the one who understands that we're blessed and we want to give back accordingly. The Samaritan was the odd one, the one who shouldn't have gotten it, but he becomes the perfect example of what it means to realize God works in my life and I want to give back. So next time we find ourselves thinking that we're the odd one, God says, yes, that's why you are the one with the right answer. You are. You're not the other nine. You understand. So to that end, right, we may think to ourselves, does this happen anymore today? Is this gospel just an old story? I would say to you that this gospel narrative replays itself over and over again in our current day in lots of situations, especially every time anybody among us in our community, us, our neighbors, whoever, realizes I'm blessed and I want to give back. I'm blessed and I want to give back. What does that look like? This morning we have something of a visual aid for you, okay, for all of us to pray through in one of our own parish members' stories. So I'd like to invite up Kathy Spees at this time, and she's going to offer in her own little words, silly, this gospel in action in so many respects. So Kathy, you come up here by me. We're happy to have you this morning. Thank you.
Hi. As Father said, my name is Kathy Spees. I'm a lifelong member of Cabrini, was born a block away from here, went to school here, got married here, my kids were baptized and went to school here, and about 11 years ago, had the funeral mass for my husband who died from cancer. God's been knocking on my door for a long time, but it took that hard tragedy before I really started to pay attention. It's said that when a death occurs, your faith either gets stronger or you may even turn away from God. After Bill's death, I was really lost and floundering and decided I wanted to join a small faith group. The first one wasn't quite right for me, through no fault of anyone's, but I kept looking and I found one that was a fit. I met some amazing people, and their leadership and willingness to share their faith was truly a gift to me. I can't say enough about the positive impact these groups can have. It's almost like a little family. My current group has been meeting for over 5 years, and we don't always agree on everything, including our faith and our beliefs, but I really think God's okay with that, that we challenge each other, and it makes us stronger. We support each other. We look out for each other. It's a community within a community with prayer as its backbone. Faith has always been a part of my life. Like many at that time, I thought I was going to be a nun in second grade, and obviously that didn't happen. But I continued to hear the knock, but have reasons not to answer the knock. I was involved in sports and took extra credits in college. I got married, and the kids were too young, and then the kids were older, and then they were involved in everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on, but interestingly enough, the times that I was forced to slow down, the times I felt empty due to whatever was going on in my life, those were the times I experienced God the most because I had to take the time to stop and listen. Those were the times I had those God moments, and some people call them coincidences, but I truly feel it was the voice of God speaking. I started to open myself up to volunteering at some of the ministries here. Granted, it's much easier when retired, but I do wish I had done more when my kids were growing up, been a better example for my children. And speaking of children, it's so neat to see so many of the Cabrini School kids here. I sub very part-time, but parents, it really does make a difference. I used to teach at the high school, and we could tell within a day which kids had the responsibility, had the respect. It really does make a difference to have your kids go through to school here. I got involved with Family Promise because a friend did. We tend not to think of West Bend as a place where homeless is a problem, but it truly is a concern. Sarah, our coordinator, shows a great deal of compassion. I give her so much credit because she is almost like a parent to some of our guests. She's very compassionate, but also she sets an example, and she's strict that they have to follow rules. And yet, she teaches us not to be judgmental, because in hearing some of the stories, it's like, there but for the grace of God go I. The Family Promise is here, starting tonight, this week. And you guys have to imagine what it's like to carry all your stuff from church to church. So they come in Sunday night, and we've had a lot of help setting up to get ready for them. And tonight, at about 5:30, our guests will come, and we have parishioners that bring in a meal, that sit and visit with them, that help, you know, take time with their kids, stay overnight. And then tomorrow morning at about 7 o'clock, a van comes, picks them up, they go to the day center where they shower, and then they have time there. But keep in mind, they have kids, and then they get the kids ready for school if they're school age, and then they get ready for work, and they go on week after week. And our goal is to give them a hand up, to give them the tools, and Family Debt Promise does such a great job with that, giving them the tools to learn how to get back on their feet and deal with budgets and get to the point where they are living independently again. I joined the Journey program when a respected mentor passed away, and I figured it would take at least 6 people to do all the things that she had done. If you attended the Journey Mass up at St. Mary's last week, or if you've ever attended the Journey Mass, you see the joy that Orion brings as he's up here leading the songs, the faith that Laura brings as she does the reading. Christina is so compassionate. She has such passion to lead our Journey program. But for all the young people, the ones that bring up the gifts, that are saying the petitions, that are ushers, that are servers, you see the face of God in these individuals, because they truly show the faith of a child. When you see the faith expressed by some of them, it has humbled me greatly, because although I'm supposed to be teaching, they're the ones that are teaching me. I even made the trip to Haiti some years ago. Bill and Wallace were just here a couple weeks ago sharing all the hope and joy that our parish brings through helping them in Haiti. But when I went there, I saw the extreme poverty, the unrest, the hunger, and that has stayed with me. And this may be selfish of me, but part of the reason I help out is to remind myself how truly blessed I am. It's really hard to feel sorry for yourself when you see the gratefulness the kids have to go to school. So you got to imagine, in Haiti, you have to have money to attend school. And because we help out with Trinity, we support it, we give them uniforms to wear. They're so proud to wear this uniform. They get the white shirt. I don't know how they wash without a washing machine. They wash it by hand to get the white shirt to just gleam, and they keep everything pressed by putting it underneath their mattress. And their houses are the size probably of our bedroom, just made out of kind of metal, and they might have concrete floor, but a lot of times they just have dirt on the floor. And yet, for many of our ones that we work with, in the house, in a very honored place on the wall, you'll see a picture of the Virgin Mary or picture of Christ. And how can we feel sorry for ourselves? I know I've given my kids too many things, because you see the children at the school so grateful. There's a bakery attached to the school, and the bakery helps teach skills, and they make buns. And the bun's very big, but inside the bun there's like a tablespoon of mystery meat, and that's their main meal of the day, and yet the gratefulness they show for that. It's hard to imagine. I remember a saying a very respected member had on his office wall when I was in high school, and it's helped form me. If it ever becomes illegal to be a Christian, will there be enough evidence to convict you? Just think about that. We're called to be the hands and feet of Christ, and yet I wonder, am I doing enough? It's been my mantra, and although I have a very long ways to go to be the person God wants me to be, Cabrini offers me such a variety of ways to strengthen my faith and to put my faith in action. I just have to take the time to open the door when I hear the knock. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. That was so nicely said and nicely done. So this is the gospel in action, and we might hear this and think to ourselves, well, that could never be my story, but the fact is every story is different. Every single person here, we do have, if we are honest in our hearts, a story of how the Lord has touched us in some way and changed our life for the better, and it happens in the context of a faith community. There is no growing in the Lord by ourselves. It's not possible. It happens in community. And so every one of us could have, if we had the chance to say it, a story kind of like Kathy's in its own beautiful, unique, special form. That's the Samaritan that came back to God and says, I realize what you've done for me, and I want to give back. That's the whole point and the whole goal. So the gospel's lived out today all the time. The gospel's alive today all the time. What a blessing. What a blessing. With that in mind, I talked last weekend about our annual fall prayerful process of committing ourselves to the parish's ministries. That was our conversation over the last few weeks. And we said this weekend would be our celebration of that commitment and our giving opportunity. So in the mail, hopefully you got anyhow over the week, our little brochure with the pledge card in the mail. And the invitation was to pray about it, to think about a gift from last year, to increase it if we possibly could, in whatever way that's personally responsible for us as a household. And then to bring that card filled out to the masses this weekend, and we were going to collect them as our offering to God, a gift of thanks like this gospel story. We're going to come back and praise him. So if you did bring along your card, which is great, just get that out and have that at hand, because we'll collect those in a second. If perhaps you didn't get something in the mail because our records might be a bit off, or you perhaps did not bring your card along and didn't fill it out, we're going to go around right now. We have our school students and ushers to help give out envelopes with a little card and a little pen in it so that you can do this morning together. If perhaps you're not on the regular mailing list and aren't a member, you're welcome to fill a card out too, because we're always happy to have people's gifts to the parish, whether you're officially registered here or not. It's like God's family. We all contribute to it in our own way, right? So either get out your card you brought, take the one coming past you now in the little baskets. Here's my card. Thank you. Because I didn't fill mine out either, it's true. So here it is. Now, we're doing this now for a couple reasons. Of course, in the context of worship, like Luke's gospel, we're going to offer thanks. But this is not supposed to be a pressure job. The point is, as I just mentioned, my poster mail sits on my desk for a month, and I don't look at it. That's the kind of person that I am. There you go. So the churches have kind of figured out this is a better way to just make sure that it's on our radar screen, and that we just take the time to all do this important exercise, because it's so easy to forget with everything else going on. That's why we're doing this together today. So take a minute to take the cards. And then once you have them, if you can't remember your envelope number or something, that's okay. The bottom's got personal information on it. We just really need your name, essentially, and then address if you're not in our database. And then on the top, there's a space for to put down what you're already giving, to pray about what you would want to increase it to, and put that down. On the right is the option for electronic giving. If you check that, we'll contact you about that to pray for it. And on the back is any suggestions for increasing by percentage if you want a chart to look at, right? So everyone's sacrifice is personal, it's different, and it's between you and the Lord, so we'll take a minute to fill it out if we need to do that, and then we're going to collect them all together. Thank you. So this time we'll have our helpers come back with the baskets and hand them down. So if you brought yours filled up, place that in at this time. If you just filled it out, you can drop those in. We only want the cards. We don't need the writing instruments back. And the regular offertory is the next basket round in a few minutes. So for now, just these cards would be great. This really is an act of offering, and I do appreciate it. And I know the whole community celebrates today the gift of generosity and the joy that it is to give, and to know that we are a blessed people in the spirit of the gospel and the witnesses that we're hearing this weekend. In that spirit, I just want to close our exercise this morning to read again the last few lines of Luke's gospel in the context of our community here. Jesus said in reply, 10 were cleansed, were they not? Where are the other 9? Has none but these people from West Bend, have none but these Cabrini parishioners returned to give me thanks? Then he says to all of us today, stand up and go, your faith has saved you.